after the break. Would have loved to start at 10. However, this morning we are having presentations by the researchers. We thought that we should start with these presentations, both for the two APPs, that is of the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation and the NYDA, and the third quarter report. You see, as we know that we're soon going to have debates about these APPs and that. And the APPs will be very important for us for monitoring for our oversight throughout the year. I would have loved to that we at least everyone was here when we start this. A colleague, colleagues are here. I know Honorable Harold Blom was here early. I saw him at 9:30, but I'm informed that he lost his phone, but he's here now. I see they're here. I'd really like us to start now. I'm told Honorable Yengeni is between the office and this thing. As really, and Honorable Dr. Van Dijk has got a beautiful cut after the long weekend, fresh. I'd really like us to start, but if everyone could be here, and my friends are boycotting me. They don't want to sit next to me. It's fine. I hear properly when they're sitting next to me, but they don't want to sit next to me. So it's fine. But also, I would like to thank the researchers up front. For this piece of work that they've done to try to put this together. At least now with these presentations, I think we'll be able to engage properly with the two departments. Just to a lot of members Comrade Kareblom, you don't have a phone, I know, so you don't disturb us because you don't have a phone, you know. I tried to phone you this morning. I hope you got it. Are you finding it? Are you winning? Okay, no, it's fine. Honorable Whip, I received a call this morning from Dr. Sean Phillips. Dr. Phillips is indicating that tomorrow. They have sent us your 30-day payment thing, you know? They have sent us their presentation for tomorrow. But now, apparently there are technicalities within them, in that they are supposed to be presenting the same, to be making the same presentation to cabinet. Now, they are requesting that Dr. Van Dijk, would you mind coming this side? Now, there's someone sitting there. No, she can't, what to call. You know, she has a disability, so please, thanks. Now, what they are saying that they have to present to cabinet the same report tomorrow, and presenting to us. So now they realize that that is going to create problems, because they would like to sequence their things such that the cabinet gets the report, we get it after. Now they realize that it may create problems for them. So they are requesting that the report is ready, as we have seen everything, the presentations are there, but they are requesting not to present it tomorrow, but any other day other than tomorrow. So I think that that is the request that they are making. I'm sure we sympathize with them, and then maybe we'll ask just the staff to fit it within the program. We'll try to fit it within the program. Mamsa, we are not here. A dying. It's Western Cape, it's after the distance. Welcome. Well, thank you very much, honorable members. Now, honorable Dr. Van Dyk, when you were outside, we welcomed you. Some people were saying you're really looking fresh after the break, you know. I'm not part of the Zimbabwe style that I hear. Okay.
Chairperson, I just want to ask you, on the agenda for tomorrow, what is then on the agenda for tomorrow? Is it as it is on the program?
Well, I only received this information this morning. It's the first time that I'm breaking it. Even the, what you call it, the staff were coming to me saying they received it on the way here, that look, it is creating technical problems for the department to present simultaneously. So it means that it's difficult then that we can have anything tomorrow, because this week's presentation, I mean, we this week was supposed to be presentation. We can't change it. It's difficult now to bring forward anyone. It would be difficult, because they have prepared themselves for the other days. But it would be nice if it were possible, you know, to bring them forward, and maybe Thursday, Friday. But unfortunately, we can't, because everybody schedules these things according to their diaries. It's very difficult to change. Yes, Co.
Well, that one is...
No, you're right. That one is an internal matter. I think we can do... Are we supposed to have a meeting tomorrow? Like,
after this monitoring
evaluation, yes, then discussion on the appointment
of the director of the parliamentary budget
committee. Well, in other words, that meeting was it? I'm not sure if it was a joint meeting or it's just our, or it's ours. Yes, yeah. But maybe what is I'm still fresh from holidays, you know, I haven't recovered yet. But I do know that we're supposed to, at one stage, we're supposed to have a joint meeting. That is a meeting that will take a resolution to the House. It is a joint meeting that we need to just put our House in order first, and then we invite the for a joint meeting. I don't know when is the joint meeting. We have not been informed. Okay. Okay. Welcome everyone. Yeah, good.
The question is because it was for tomorrow. When is it? Where is it going to be seated in? Because tomorrow we're going to have this discussion, and after the presentation, we're going to be this discussion. So where are we going? Where are we moving it to? According to the program, it's going to be done after.
Now, I think I'm open to advice if we want to have this meeting tomorrow or we want to fit it after another meeting, because all that we want to do, the honorable members, is to formalize what we have already discussed. So I'm not sure that it would be useful just to come for it alone, but because we can always fit it in any meeting. Because we're formalizing something that we have already discussed. The reason that we're having it on the program is because I think that to remind honorable members, we are advised that when we discuss it, it was not in the program. So that the requirement of the Act is that we should have a transparent process. So we are trying to conform to that transparent, what you call a process. That's why we're putting it on the program. But it's something really we had already discussed, we had a resolve on this matter. It's formalizing it. That's why I'm saying we can have it tomorrow first, if we want to meet tomorrow. If not, then when we have another meeting, we fit it in. But what we will have to do, if we're not having it tomorrow, we ask what we call the staff to re-advertise the meeting so that if it is going to be on Thursday or when, then we set in our Z-list so that it should reflect in the Z-list that we postponed it to that particular day. They say if we bring them tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm tomorrow.
Now, look, all that I was saying is that, you know, for internal meetings, we can play around. We can always play around with internal meetings. But for external people, they've got their own arrangements. Now, if you say tomorrow, because we have a problem tomorrow,
and then
we prolong this thing so much. It was just to say we are no more heavy monitoring and evaluation. We move this to the day. Now it has taken 30 minutes. Don't open for us to start discussing, because we at least know the main issue here is that it don't take an hour. The issue was, we can't come here to discuss an issue which you already know about. Can we move the process date or discuss it today? That's what I said. Now we are now getting into our whole program.
Now I think honored members were one. Now I think that the request that or proposal that honored members were making was that would it be possible to bring other meetings forward? So saying that it is not possible because it will be short notice. We welcome the researchers. Welcome our visitors. I see everyone had a good holiday. No blue eyes. I see the blue eyes at the back there. Okay.
We need to have, you know, approval, obviously. But if they can ask them and they say yes, they're quite happy, they have a project presentation, they agree, and then they can come. Yeah. Otherwise, we all sit at home.
Yeah.
We can't even play golf because the weather's bad.
No, I'm not going to can arrange that. We have a call today tomorrow.
That's a good arrangement. Mm.
No, it's fine. I'm sure they can do that.
Maybe before we start, I need to say that we would have loved for members to have the actual documents, the strategic plan document and the annual performance plan documents, because we'll be interacting with the documents, making illustrations on the document. We had Darren going to try and get the copies for members. I hope he's coming back now. Thanks.
Well, you want to start by prayer?
When did you do this then, the start with the third quarter? You have a problem with that?
Actually, we don't have a problem. We can start with any of this.
Okay, when now maybe I should leave it in your hands. You wanted to start with the...
With the APPs.
With the APPs, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you are arranging copies.
Yeah, but if Chair feels that we must start with the third quarter.
No. I have no pressure.
Okay.
So I'm going to check again with you. How far is it, Darren?
No. See, I think we might as well just start. Darren will find us on our way.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much,
Chairperson. Do you want to check with Darren?
Greetings, honorable members.
Now, it is Uber check.
We're going to deal with the APC of the Department of Performance Monitoring Evaluation, firstly, and then secondly, we'll deal with the NYDA APC, which Musa will be presenting. Chairperson, maybe upfront before I start presenting, I would. It is important for me to indicate that in analyzing an APP of the department that does not deal with the service delivery, frontline services, it's quite a complex exercise, you know, because it's not like your Department of Education, your Home Affairs, where they will say, we built so much schools, you know, after so long. Will build so much hospitals after so long. So here we're dealing with a department which is particularly new, which is still dealing with the development of policies and guidelines and terms of references and stuff like that.
and therefore it's always a challenge to analyze the state plan of that department. However, we have identified some key issues moving forward that this committee would have to, as a portfolio committee, look into and contribute in ensuring that the department is actually becoming a fully fledged department. Slide number two, Chair, deals with the introduction where we are saying the aim of the presentation is to assist the Standing Committee on Appropriation to achieve dual mandate as a portfolio and as a Standing Committee. We thought it would be important, Chair, to indicate that this committee is for the dual mandate. It was formed as a Standing Committee on Appropriations, but later was given an additional responsibility to look at the PME and NYDA. And we also look at the legislative framework, which is the second part of the first slide, and mandate of the department. Obviously, the department was promulgated by the State President, Honorable Tshisi Zuma, in 2010. The mandate of the department was derived from Section 85(2) of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And Chair, just to indicate that up to now, there is no legislation, Chair, that gives effect to this particular provision of the Constitution with regard to the department, to strengthen the mandate of the department. Because you would assume that when a department is promulgated through the provision of the Constitution, there will be a legislation that will be a developed to actually give effect to the provision, so that the department's mandate will be more strengthened and more a sound. The responsibility of the department is to facilitate development plans or delivery agreements for cross-cutting priorities for outcomes of government and monitor and evaluate the implementation of this plan. It's to monitor the performance of individual national and provincial government and municipalities, to monitor frontline service delivery, to manage the presidential hotline, to carry out evaluations of major and strategic government programs, and promote good monitoring and evaluation practices in government. Slide number three, which is number four in this case, focuses on the outcome-based approach. As we know that the government adopted outcome-based approach in 2009. However, the Department of Customs Monitoring and Evaluation does not have its own outcome that focuses on. But instead, it monitors the 12 prioritized outcomes, which concentrate on increasing the strategic focus of government and implementing the imperatives for cooperative governance. Because one might ask, Chair, that all the departments have got their own outcomes, which are linked to their strategic plans, which are linked to their performance agreements for ministers and to delivery agreements. But the PME does not have such, because its role is to monitor those outcomes if they are actually implemented accordingly. And this is done through the development of ministerial performance agreements and interdepartmental and intergovernmental delivery agreements, as well as the regular monitoring of delivery agreements. You remember that there are performance agreements that are signed between the ministers and the president, and the delivery agreements that are signed by the implementing agencies and stakeholders. The intention is to change the culture of focusing on activities instead of results. This includes the increasing use of evidence in policymaking, planning, and monitoring. As we know that M&E also contributes quite effectively in the decision-making process and planning for the future. The next slide, Chair, deals with the policy shift in the department. Currently, the 2012 up to 2015-16 strategic plan has not changed, Chair. So there's been no policy shift on the department. Yes. So the only thing that they produced was the annual performance plan, which then gives a detailed information of what they are going to do this financial year moving forward. But as of the threat plan, there is no change. been the same place plan, because there's no policy that is actually shifted or changed. The only thing that has happened here in the department is streamlining, reallocation, and integration of certain programs and sub-programs to ensure an effective and efficient delivery in the department. For instance, some of the functions of sub-program monitoring and evaluation data support have been shifted from this branch to the monitoring, to the outcome monitoring and evaluation program in order to improve accountability and integration of functions. So the sub-program called monitoring and evaluation data support has been shifted to some functions of this sub-program, basically, not the sub-program as a whole, some functions of the sub-program, monitoring data and support, has been shifted to outcome monitoring and evaluation. In 2012-2013, terms of references for data forums were developed and data forums were established for 10 outcomes. And Chair, we are saying in this slide, Chair, the department should explain which functions have been shifted from the monitoring evaluation data support program to the outcome monitoring evaluation. And we are saying, Chair, the second point is with regard to the 10 data forums and 10 of references that were developed for 10 outcomes. We're saying we know that there are 12 outcomes that were prioritized for the department to monitor. But now, when they've completed the data forums and 10 of references for 10 outcomes, they have not indicated in the annual performance plan as to say what is going to happen to the other two outcomes. Because we know that there are 12 prioritized outcomes that the department is responsible for monitoring. So we're saying it will therefore be important to find out whether there are any plans to establish data forums for the remaining two outcomes. If so, what time frames and budget does the department proposes in this regard? Because if then they have a plan for these two outcomes, they need to come up with time frames. Also in the APP, they need to come up with the budget also for this outcome, very clear time frames and budget, because they are nowhere to be found in the current APP. They've only spoken about 10 now, but we know that there are 12 of them. The next slide, Chair, deals with the post-establishment and vacancy rate. In the APP, Chair, it was indicated that they have got about 197 posts as of the end of 2012-2013 financial year. But there are vacancies among of that number, there are vacancies of about 25 positions that are not filled, which were supposed to be filled in the same year. Then we're saying over the MTF, the post establishment is expected to increase also to 236 in 2015-2016. Now, we're saying here, seeing that there are currently 25 vacant positions which are supposed to have been filled in the last financial year, the department should explain how and when it intends filling these posts. What they did in the APP is just to indicate that we will fill these 25 posts, but there are no clear time frames to say when are they going to be filled and which programs are most affected. You see, just to unpack it a bit, instead of giving just a bulk of the vacancies. Obviously, we all know that there are 25 vacancies, so what? But we need to know which sub-programs and programs are mostly affected and whether these vacancies have an impact on the deliverables or on achieving these performance targets that they've set themselves for 2013-2014. In addition, it is not clear as to how many new posts are going to be filled in 2013-2014. 2014-15 and 2015-16 respectively. What they've indicated in the annual performance plan is that they will be increasing their post-establishment to 236 by 2015-16, but they're not categorizing it in terms of the MTF period. They say only 2013-2014 we're going to fill so much. 2014-15 is how much we're going to fill. So we thought that it would be clear, it should be important for the APP to clarify that, or for the department to clarify that, so that we are able to monitor and track if these posts really are being filled. And with regard to the 25 vacant posts still chair. Don't explain programs and sub-programs of all will be covered this program, I mean this point. But what also came out from the APP was the fact that these posts in these different programs are actually outlined or articulated in terms of percentages, not in terms of actual figures. So we are saying the department must give us real figures of these vacancies per program so that we know. Because if we talk about the 10%, 10% of how many positions for which program is not clear. So the APP should be clear on that. 10% of 5 posts in the sub-program of outcome monitoring and evaluation. The next slide, Chair, is really to give you the outline of the budget allocations per program and economic classification, which is the table that is found in the APP. And this table, Chair, we felt that it should be important for us to put it on this presentation and compare with the table that we've extracted from the E&E of the Treasury. That speaks about the allocations per sub-program. Now, in the APP, you only find this table that speaks about the allocations per program. Now, it becomes difficult for you to align the allocations per sub-program because they are only provided per program in the APP. Now, for you to be able to align the allocations or to unpack these allocations per sub-program, you have to go to the A&D and extract that table. So we thought that, Chair, it would be important for the department, Chair, to actually include or incorporate the budget allocations per sub-program in the APP so that members moving forward will know how much is budgeted for which sub-program and be able to track the expenditure patterns and also be able to align the target of these sub-programs vis-a-vis the allocation. Because for now, if you only have the global table, which is table one, it doesn't really give a sense of what is that goes into which sub-program. For instance, here you've got under administration, departmental management as a sub-program, corporate financial services as a sub-program, information technology, internal audit, and also and so forth and so forth. In each program, you've got sub-programs. Therefore, we're saying those sub-programs should be allocated, should be indicated in the APP how much have they received in this budget or in this financial year. The total amount that has been allocated to the department chair for 2013-14 is 192.7 million rand. 2014-15 is 202 million rand. 2015-16 is 210.7 million rand. The budget is increasing. But when we look at the increase in terms of the budget increase in terms of economic classification, we've realized that current payments are actually leading, precisely because of the vacancies that are still going to be filled, two, precisely because of the capacity that the department is actually trying to develop and establish since it's a new department. You'll understand that since they've highlighted that they will have about 236 people by 2015, and therefore it means they will employ as the year goes. But that's why we said earlier on, we need to know by 2013-15 how many positions are going to be filled of the new post. 14-15, how many positions and how much is budgeted for that? And the APP is not there. And Chair, we are on this slide, Chair, we are trying to show you the juncture between the increase on the personnel budget versus the decline on the CAPEX budget. Chair, as the department is a new department, it has got to beef up its capacity. So it means to say that it will have to employ more people moving forward.
In employing more people, you'll assume and understand that there will be more demand for office accommodation, for computer equipment, you know, and other CAPEX items. And in no way you can expand the department without looking into the CAPEX issue. We've seen in other departments that we've analyzed and that got that some posts have had to be frozen because there are no sufficient office accommodations. People only realize when they've advertised positions and have to appoint people that there are no office accommodations that are sufficient for the new recruits. Even here in Parliament, we did have a case similar to this where a composition of employees budget is not aligned to the CAPEX budget, and people were employed and they didn't have enough facilities to operate. And we're saying, Chair, from the beginning, your committee needs to. Actually, I'm not sure Sebo can tell us. Sebo can tell us. It's part of the people who are affected by this disjuncture. So we're saying, Chair, the committee, this is the kind of disjuncture that you don't need in a department that is still going to employ more people, that has got so much vacancies, that has got so much targets to achieve. Because obviously you remember that the PME is under the presidency. And as it expands moving forward, it's clear that some components will have to move out of the president's premises and occupy other buildings outside. And therefore, if those things are not budgeted here, how is it possible that those things are going to be done? And the next slide, Chair, it also still deals with the overview of the overall budget that I've already spoken to. But the issue that we're raising on the slide, Chair, is that we have to ask, the question has to be asked about the misalignment between CAPEX budget and composition of employees, because presumably as the department employs more people, the demand for CAPEX items should increase. The department also has only included one table in the APP, while table one is important as it consists of, okay, I've covered already these issues. Then on the next slide, Chair, we're dealing with the assessment of the program now.
Chair, can I just have clarity on something, please? On slide 7, you refer to current payments, and then you also refer to current payments here where you say, you know, the current payments has increased from 146 to the certificate. You know, it's mainly as a result of the unfilled positions that you have this figure. But then what is the difference? But why is that included in there when you've got a separate one for compensation of employees? Shouldn't it be included there? Isn't that where it should be lying?
Thanks, Honorable Swart. What we are highlighting, Honorable Swart, is that overall the increase in current payments is dominated by the compensation for employees.
The
compensation
for employees.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we're trying to indicate that the increase, overall increase on current payments is actually driven by the community employees, which is the personnel, because they've got to employ more people and so forth and so forth. Then on slide 11, we are giving an assessment of the program. We've said that each program has got sub-program. Administration has got dependent management, has got corporate and financial services, IT support and internal audit, outcome monitoring, which is program 2, has got program management for outcome monitoring and evaluation, outcome support, evaluation and research. Program 3, monitoring evaluation, system coordinating and support, have got program management as a sub-program for monitoring and evaluation systems, coordination and support, monitoring and evaluation and capacity building, monitoring and evaluation data support. Program 4 consists of program management, institutional performance, monitoring and frontline service delivery. We're just outlining the programs linked to their sub-programs so that members can at least have a clue of what administration, what is under administration, which is program number 1, what is under the program number 2, and stuff like that, because I understand that as we're dealing with a new department, so we must try by all means to be as simple as possible so that we put all the pieces of the puzzle together and members would have that basic understanding. We're saying that the 2013-2014 allocation for administration has shown an increase from 53.3 million to 56.9 million. with the corporate and financial services program being allocated the highest amount of funds by 24.3 million. And we're saying, according to the annual performance plan of the DPME, page 14, the internal audit subprogram has only one employee, and the rest of the task is done by a consultant. And this, this subprogram allocation is increasing to 2.2 million in 2013-2014, 2.4 million in 2014-2015, and 2.5 million in 2015-16, respectively. It is important to note that Information Technology and Support Program, which is responsible for IT matters relating to infrastructure, government departmental support, and monitoring and evaluation, only has staff complement of 12. The issues on this program, Chair, that we are raising is that the department should explain whether 12 people are sufficient to run the IT support to the department, including assisting all other national and provincial government departments on the IT monitoring. Because the MNE, the DPME, is the only department that is the custodian on the MNE, and therefore the policies, the expertise, the IT expertise on MNE might not be necessarily similar to any other IT specialist that you find in the market. And therefore the department was tasked with the responsibility to support the national and provincial department when they're implementing their MNE on, in terms of their IT MNE. So now we're saying, taking into account only 12 people are responsible for the MNE in the department, and they are also responsible for support, you know, in other departments. And we're saying, will that be sufficient moving forward? You know, and that's why we were saying earlier on, we need to know how many posts in which sub-program are actually created and are going to be filled this year. So that we're able to see that, okay, since we've got 12 people on this sub-program, at least this year, you're going to fill maybe 10 and then 22. Because surely this program is one of the sub-programs that requires more capacity, because it doesn't only support the department itself, but also it escalates at the national and the provincial level, even to municipalities, because there's an additional component that there will be dealing with the municipalities. We're saying also, Chair, second, the department should quantify in page 16 the number of activities described in the communication plan, which needs to be implemented by the end of the 2013-2014, and the costing of such activities. The department has just outlined that there will be activities emanating from communication plan for this period by end of 2013-14, but there is no quantity to say how many of those activities are going to be achieved in the first quarter, in the second quarter, in the third quarter, and also in the fourth quarter. And also the costing of those activities will be quite important. That's why we're saying then that table of a sub-program budgeting needs to be factored into the ADP, so that then you are able to align the activities in the APP and the resources allocated. Because when they give you that global picture, you are unable to track down these sub-programs, how much have they spent, how much have they not spent, and what have been achieved, what not have been achieved. Point three, Chair, we are saying the department should outline the time frame for implementation of internal audit projects in page 17. The department just said there will be implementation of internal audit projects, but never mentioned any time frame. So we're saying it will be important moving forward for this committee to conduct effective oversight. It must be assisted, you know, by correcting some of these things. And the department should explain whether are there any plans to employ internal auditors in the current financial year instead of consultants. As I've indicated in the earlier slide, Chair, that the department has got only one employee in the sub-program of internal auditor. And we're saying, Chair, it will be important moving forward for the department, while it's building its capacity, to employ more internal auditors instead of relying on consultants. Because, Chair, the statistics will tell you, if, Chair, I'm writing this document for Parliament, and Parliament is paying me 10,000 rand as an employee, the consultant that was going to come in, that would have come in and do the same job that I'm doing, Parliament might have been paying probably 1.5 million. I'm just making an example. Mm. So some of these decisions to employ or to appoint consultants are counterproductive in a way that they actually defeat the whole principle of triple E's that your PFMA is actually advocating, that when you make a decision, it must be economic, effective and efficient. Now, not employing people under internal audit is actually a posing a risk also of losing an institutional memory in the department, because these consultants, obviously, they will come and go. The next point, we are saying the department should table before the committee the improvement plan as it was submitted to the AG. This will assist the committee in making more meaningful contributions during oversight, as they will know precisely which areas are outlined in the improvement plan. Based on the AG's findings last year, the department needed to come up with an improvement plan to intervene in certain areas. And we're saying that improvement plan must be made available to this committee, so that the committee will begin to study that improvement plan and see if the department is really on track in addressing the findings that were raised by the AG's report. There will be 4 provincial and 1 national workshops on MNEIT guidelines in the current financial year. And we're asking, Chair, that will this be enough or sufficient that all government departments will understand the guidelines of IT MNE? You know, for this year, obviously, it's only 1 workshop for national departments, and there'll be 4 workshops for provincial departments. Will this time be sufficient for all these stakeholders to understand, you know, the IT, MNE IT, that the department is workshopping these people on. And the next slide said deals with the program 2, which is outcome monitoring and evaluation. The allocation share for this program has increased from 46 million to 61.2 million, with the outcome support sub-program being the highest by 37.9 million amongst the sub-programs. There has been an increase from 28.5 million to 37.9 million in comparison to the last financial year. The increase is again dominated by a huge increase in expenditure on personnel, rising from 29.1 million to 38.4 million. And the thing, the outcome support is a support program also, facilitates and monitors the implementation of the 12 prioritized outcomes, and has a staff component of 24 people at the end of 2012-13 financial year. The budget increase for the program has been derived from the evaluation and research sub-program, as it intends to carry out more evaluations in the 2013-2014 financial year. About 8 evaluations have been concluded by the end of 2012-2013 financial year, and an amount of 12 million is allocated for evaluation in 2013-14, 15 million in 2014-15, and 20 million in 2015-16. The evaluation research has a staff component of 4, as of the end of the 2012-2013 financial year. So I intentionally I drawn all these figures of staff component of the program intentionally so, just to give a full picture of which sub-programs have got more capacity, and of those sub-programs, which ones are the core or contribute more than the core mandate of the department. And we are saying, Chair, on the next slide, the issues, the department should provide a clear plan as to how it intends capacitating the outcome support as well as evaluation and research sub-program, since it is mandated to monitor and evaluate outcomes-based approach for the prioritized health outcome. As I've indicated earlier on, that the APP indicates that it's only 10 data forums for 10 outcomes that have been developed. And we're saying there must be a plan that speaks to the capacitating of the outcome support, because this sub-program monitors all the 12 prioritized outcomes in government. So now, when you have only 24 people, 24 staff components, per outcome, you might have more than 2-3 departments, because the outcomes are linked. You find that outcome 1 is linked with outcome 3 or outcome 5 or outcome 6, and therefore you need more people with different skills to monitor those outcomes. And one person will not be able to monitor, you know, a one outcome. So we're saying there must be a clear capacity plan that as the department is charged with the responsibility to monitor and evaluate these outcomes. it must actually capacitate the sub-program and give necessary expertise and stuff like that. The department should quantify the output of evaluation to be achieved through allocated budget of 12 million in 2013-14, 15 million, and so forth in the medium term. We are saying that the evaluations that are going to be done, there is no clear time frame, Chair. And for that, we are saying the department should give us a clear time frame to say, this year, these are the evaluations, this is the number of evaluations that we are going to achieve. In the first quarter, we know that evaluations, you know, takes, you know, long to finalize. Well, it might not necessarily be on a quarterly basis, but at least on annual basis, they should tell us how many per year they're going to achieve moving forward, as we can see that their budgets allocated for the next 3 years. And we are saying that these allocations must be informed by the costing of these evaluations that are going to be done. Because for now, the allocations are just outlined, but you don't see the quantum of the allocations that are going to be done through the 12 million rand in 2013-14. You don't see the quantum of the evaluations that are going to be done through the 20 million rand in 2015 and 2016. So we're saying we need a clear plan on those evaluations as the budget has been allocated to them. And we are not sure if these allocations are informed by the costing, Chair. And the program three, Chair, the monitoring evaluation system coordination and support program. The 2013-14 allocation has increased for this program, Chair, from 13.3 million to 17.2 million. This increase can be attributed to the increase in the allocation for monitoring evaluation data support sub-program, which has increased from 4.4 million to 8.2 million in 2013. So I want to indicate to you that this kind of information is not found in the APP, Chair. It's not in the APP. This information, Chair, is part and parcel of your planning tools that should be in the planning document, but you'll find it elsewhere in the treasurer's document. Because at least the APP Chair should be able to tell you what is it that we're going to do this year, with how much, you know, for how long. That's the purpose of the APP. The Monitoring Evaluation Data Support Sub-Program provides data analysis support services. It has a staff complement of 8 people and has managed to establish and develop terms of references and data forums for 10 outcomes, which we've spoken about. The Monitoring Evaluation Policy and Capacity Building is a sub-program. Had a staff complement of 7 people in 2012-2013. This may be insufficient considering its main function, which is to coordinate the implementation of monitoring evaluation policies, system and capacity building programs. The issue, Chair, here is that we should explain how it is possible for a capacity building program targeting other departments to have a staff complement of only 7 people. If you've got a capacity building program, say, for other departments, means you need people who are going to specialize in different programs, different departments, then, I mean, how is it possible to actually achieve that with 7 people moving forward? That's why we sort of said earlier on, we need vacancies and these new posts that are going to be filled to be aligned to these sub-programs so that we know which sub-program is going to benefit and which one is not going to benefit. The department has developed and established terms of references. Okay, I've covered that. Then, Chair, there is an elephant in the house that is called the results bill. Chair, this is an elephant in the house. Yeah, in 2011-2012 strategic planning, Chair, is actually outlining categorically clear that the when is the results bill going to be submitted to cabinet and be taken to parliament, you know, all those processes. And by this year, it's the element in the house, Chair. What we have discovered, Chair, is that in the APP, the results bill is nowhere to be found, Chair. So we're not sure whether it's removed entirely from the table, or is it still part of the agenda of the department? Because the certain chair, by 2010, 2011, there was no legislation. But by 2011, 2012, chair, there was a concept document for draft results bill approved by the DPME top management. And by 2012-2013, which is the last financial year, the draft bill submitted to cabinet for approval by March 2013. And by 2013-14, which is the current financial year, the bill is supposed to be submitted to parliament and be passed by parliament by March 2014. So, Chair, we are saying that in the APP, in the APP, Chair, the results bill is not there. So we are saying, Chair, the importance, considering the importance of the bill, Chair, because the bill was initiated to formalize the mandate of the department as a custodian of government-wide monitoring and evaluation, and the aim of the bill was to bring more policy certainty to the planning, monitoring, and evaluation functions of government. As I've indicated earlier on, Chair, that the department was just promulgated in terms of Section 85(2) of the Constitution, and therefore this bill, Chair, was going to formalize the mandate. And it was going to bring more a solid foundation for monitoring and evaluation policies. Because for now, currently, we know that some departments, yes, do have monitoring and evaluation, some don't have, you know. People are doing it willy-nilly, and there's nothing that enforces them to actually comply with the M&E process and incorporate M&E program. Whereas the M&E program is one of the most important elements for effective and efficient delivery of services. And it also goes back to planning, that it informs the planning as government moving forward, because the results of the monitoring process and evaluation that we've done in the past will inform your decision-making moving forward. So I think this bill, Chair, is quite critical, it's quite important. If the department is there to remove it from the table, we call upon the members of this committee to actually relook at this issue when the department comes to make its presentation. And the next program, Chair, is Program 4, which is Public Sector Oversight. The 2013-2015 allocation also in this program has increased from 52.4 million to 57.3 million. This increase can be attributed to the Frontline Service Delivery and Sub-Program, which has increased from 35.5 million to 38.7 million. In order to facilitate the improvement of frontline service delivery, including the presidential hotline, the department has allocated $8 million to conduct approximately 140 site visits over the MCF. An amount of $37.1 million has been allocated for CETA to pay for service provision such as telecommunications and presidential hotline. Despite this allocation, there has been under expenditure at the end of the third quarter, 2012-2013. And we've picked up this issue up when we're analyzing the third quarter of the PME, that as much as they've increased the allocated amount for CETA for telecommunication, because the telecommunication companies, they provide the service of the presidential hotline, but there's been under expenditure in this regard. And we are worried that you're increasing an allocation, you know, might not necessarily address the problems that are actually in the presidential hotline. But I'm happy that the committee has actually taken a decision to visit the presidential hotline so that they would get a briefing, a proper briefing and full briefing of how does this thing operate, what are the challenges on this thing, because it does have challenges, this hotline. The sub-program is about 26 staff. As at the end of 2012-2013, the institutional performance monitoring and sub-program increased from 15.3 million to 16.5 million to facilitate institutional performance monitoring, the MPET, and government evaluation. You'll remember, members, that one of the MPET was presented before the departure to the recess. It was presented by the department. The performance monitoring of individual institutions is a key element of the service delivery agreement for outcome 12. The management performance assessment tool was completed in 2011-2012. The sub-program has a staff complement of about 12 people as at the end of 2012. So, Chair, in a nutshell, Chair, the institutional performance monitoring as a sub-program is the one that performs the management performance assessment, the institutional performance monitoring as a sub-program for public sector oversight. You see, public sector oversight chair has got three sub-programs. It has got management program, which manages the entire program. That's its function, that's a program. Then you've got another two sub-programs, which is your frontline service delivery, as well as your institutional performance monitoring. So the frontline service delivery is the one that actually the department is using to go to site visit, you know, unannounced visit, where they go in and check the frontline service delivery, like the home affairs, you know, the transport and municipalities. Then the institutional performance monitoring is a sub-program of this program also. What it does is to assess the management performance of national and provincial government, but also municipalities will be part of that assessment moving forward. Now, the performance of monitoring of individual institutions is a key element of service delivery agreement for 12 outcomes. And I've covered the last bullet point. The issues that you are raising, Chair, on this is that the department should quantify the number of service delivery sites visited, as well as those which have been selected for improvement monitoring visits by 30 April 2013 and by May 2013 respectively. It may be that the committee may choose to verify the improvement in those sites. So there are two programs here, Chair. There is a program where the department will go for site visit for the first time. And there is a program now where the department will go for the second time to check the improvements that are being done through implementing its recommendations and other findings that were found in the first visit. So we're saying the department must give us quantity of these visits, how many visits that are going to be undertaken for improvement monitoring visits. So maybe the committee can actually, in its oversight, no, actually, we don't have to go with them, Chair. Maybe your oversight trips can be informed by these. Just to follow up on whether, just to see, Chair, whether these recommendations and findings of the department are actually taken serious by other departments, and especially now that there is no law, there is no legal framework that formalizes the mandate of the department, and therefore it will always be a dire situation, because when we do these evaluations, we do these monitoring evaluations and give findings and make recommendations, but it can't enforce the implementation of these recommendations because there's no legislative framework.
Yeah.
So people choose to do it if they want to do it. They choose to implement if they want to implement. And if they don't want to implement, it's up to them. You see. Yeah. So it is clear, we're saying, Chair, it is not clear how many planned site visits are intended to be conducted per quarter by the department and the frontline service delivery. We're saying there must be a clear quantity on that one. The cost and allocation for such activities also are unclear. Saying that they provide the clear site visit, the quantity of site visits are going to be undertaken per quarter, if there are any, and give us the allocation, the funding of those visits, how much are they going to spend on those visits. We know that some of these visits, they do it jointly with the Premier's Office of provinces which they are visiting, but surely some of the budget or some of the resources are actually coming from the department. Then we're saying under the Presidential Hotline sub-program, it is not clear as to how many cases are targeted to be achieved per quarter. And can the department quantify the cases targeted in actual terms as opposed to a percentage in page 71? So in page 71, they just give you a percentage of cases that they want to achieve, but they have not given the quantity. Because if you're saying you want to achieve 20% cases, that 20% must be informed by a figure. 20% of what? 20% of 500 cases? 20% of 200? So more often than not, you'll see on the APP that they have not really given figures, because figures make you commit, you see, and whereas percentages, you don't commit. You're not committing if you give us percentages, because percentages might be any other figure. So it's not easy to follow up on that one. So we're saying the APP should be clear on that. And it is also not clear as to who verifies and follow up on whether the reported cases were properly resolved. The Presidential Hotline receives cases, and the department will resolve those cases through, you know, those mechanisms. But post that process, who then verifies as to whether when Mr. Gelderblom was reporting that his ID had a problem with Home Affairs and the DMA referred him to Home Affairs, whether really that case was properly resolved or it was just a passing of the buck to say, no, no, go to Home Affairs and then Home Affairs will help you on this, because you know, the department cannot deal with all these cases alone. Some of the cases mostly are referrals, you know, to the specific department. So we're saying that there must be a mechanism that seeks to verify the process. And also issues for consideration, so we're saying according to the 2011-2012 to 14-15 threat plan, the results field is supposed to be submitted to cabinet, which we've covered that. And we are outlining the importance of the bill. It is important to note that the bill, the results bill, is not in the annual performance plan of the department. So we're not sure if it's still on the card or not. The department should ensure that all vacant positions are filled in all programs, since the capacity of the department is the most important issue to be addressed to ensure the effective and efficient delivery of services, especially now that there will be a new component, which is called Municipality Assessment Program. Regarding the increase in the personnel budget and the decrease in the CAPEX budget, it will be important for the department to explain the root causes of such a decrease, as generally there is a positive relationship between these two economic classifications when you're beefing up the capacity. Mm-hmm. And then we're saying in order for the committee to make sense of the annual performance plan and its budget, the department should align the sub-program activities or targets with the allocations in the APP. And we're saying the internal audit should be capacitated by reducing the level of outsourcing in that sub-program. The committee may consider requesting a progress report on the 12 prioritized outcomes to ascertain the success of these key areas of government and to determine whether the desired impact is being realized. We're saying although the department obtained an unqualified opinion in 2011-2012, the AG raised some findings in the annual report. The department should table before the committee the improvement plan, which I've spoken about, which is kind of an intervention in those areas. And we're saying this will assist the committee to make meaningful contribution during its oversight, because it will know exactly where have they committed themselves to improve. And just a few issues that were raised in that AG report, in the previous annual report. It's inadequate leadership oversight responsibility on financial and predetermined objectives, reporting and compliance with laws, lack of monitoring by supervisors resulted in a material misstatement in the financial statement. So these are the issues, few issues that were raised by the AG in the past. So moving forward, the committee might want to know how far is the department and how does this APP addresses these kinds of issues moving forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
I was waiting for another part to say, now wait.
I said good morning, I didn't talk this morning.
Yeah, honorable members, I think it's an interesting, there's an interesting issue that has been raised. But I do know that this APP is very long, and we appreciate the issues that have been raised. I know that there are other issues that are important that have not been flagged here. Now the time is 11:30. I don't know if you want Pelelani to and Musa to go to the next one, or want to deal with this one. Maybe we should deal with this one whilst it is still hot. We have the whole day to deal with this. All right, members, I want to make a request, an appeal to all our members. I know that this leadership here, the issues of the phone. You know, I'm really appealing, I know. This leadership has got all kinds of responsibilities.
But can we just, can I request that we just focus a little bit on this on the APP. But then with that, honourable members, if we agree that we're going to deal, take one at a time, can we raise issues of comments that we would like to raise and questions generally? Well, we're not going to have the time for what is it normally called? Clarity, questions of clarity. So we take everything at once, honestly.
Chair, that's what I was wanting to address. Firstly, let me acknowledge the and thank the researcher for their work. But I think, in my opinion, Chair, unless there's something that we've picked up that is fundamentally different to the analysis that has been presented, I think, in the APP, it's really just to enrich our understanding of what is in the documentation, so that when we interact with the department, we interact at an informed level. I don't know, by questioning the analysis or by questioning the researchers what we're going to do, because it's almost like we're oversighting their work. So I think just to get the presentations, and if there's something that we pick up that we might find fundamentally offensive or different to what we think, then yes, we can raise those issues.
No, Chair. I agree with Honourable Snell, because basically, thank you very much for the presentation, because basically what it gives us is pointers that we must look at when we interact with the department. In other words, we must take up these issues that have been raised by the researchers with the department themselves, so that they can tell us, you know, because the researchers have researched something, but is it totally correct in terms of what the department thinks? So let us, you know, we should raise these issues there, not with the researchers, because we can't fight with the researchers about what they think.
Okay. Any other view?
My view is based on the issue of different skills needed for different works, because this is where the issue of consultants come in, because we are dealing with, so that we need proper clarity here, because there's a view that they deal with different departments that would need different skills, and getting someone permanent will be more costly than having a consultant for that day and dealing with those issues and finishing it, than having someone who will be sitting there every day waiting for that day, getting a monthly salary, waiting to go and do some issues there. Those are some issues where we must be on the same par with the researchers, because some issues need to be more clearer than permanent staff versus consultants, especially after some briefing and what you observed from the broad perspective of their work. And I think their relationship with national NDP will come up when they give us their strategic overview. Here it was just this permanent staff versus consultants, because somewhere along the line their budget is going to be different because of the fact that there's a once-off issue that might be more cost-effective than, but you can clarify it further if you still don't agree on it.
Thank you, Chair, but the way I understand in terms of permanent consultants, there are where I tend to agree with, because when you talk about monitoring and evaluating, for me it's not a once-off thing. You can't come one day and say you're monitoring me. Are your books correct? Oh, yeah, it's finished. It doesn't happen. There needs to be a process or a time where you're just monitoring this person, that this person, is he or she in line with what needs to happen? Or do they understand what needs to happen? But when we use consultants will come in with their own questionnaire and everything, and it vanishes. The second issue in terms of consultants is about information. Who is the custodian? Because the consultant will come in, if you want to become a custodian of that information, they say, no, this is what I developed, you paid me to develop, but that is not your info. So in a way, they've got proprietary rights to keep it or to sell it to you. So as much as the department will be explaining that there's a one-off thing, reality is, if that is the truth. That answer that they're giving to us, is it the truth? It means then we have to really re-look and check whether it's what they are saying or someone is just doing it for the sake of doing it. We need to be clear about that. Thank you.
Sure. I agree with Honorable Mashigo that we must check very carefully on the expenditure related to consultants, but I think we've just got to bear something in mind. And that is that, as far as evaluation is concerned, and evaluation only, we agreed, I think, when we were at the Vanas or wherever we saw the department, we had that workshop, that, evaluations are done virtually all the time by consultants and not by, but the outcomes and the impacts of that, we must make sure that they don't use consultants for that. But the evaluations must be consultants because we want the independence of the evaluation itself. But the committee agreed to it at the time.
Consulting here, I miss what Honorable Swart was saying. You were saying the evaluation can be done by independent people.
Chief, when we had a meeting with them, I think it was Narmanis that we had the workshop, Arabella, where they explained all the process and we had that sick file that we went through. What worries me at this stage is, for instance, that they're using consultants like on something like internal audit, which they shouldn't be doing. But we agreed at the time and we understood the reasons for them using consultants for evaluations only the evaluation. That's only done once every year or once every 3 years. And that consultants they appoint for that specifically because you want the evaluation to be independent of their own findings.
I see Helen in a way is nodding, you want to head to this table as well as a part of this nodding. Mr. Masoyu, have we all got this document? Has it been distributed?
No, it was in January.
Okay. Now, I think that it would be useful, to again raise your frequencies. Maybe, yeah. Now, what is given me is some of the issues that we raised and their responses, which could also would assist us in terms of saying, is what is being said here in line with what Perez, they had what we call undertaken to do with us. But the point really that I wanted to comment on is what Honorable Snell. But now I know that because it's cloudy outside, he wants to help this cloud outside. He's not here. For me, I thought that this exercise, I agree with what is said by honorable members that maybe we should not engage with the researchers as we would engage with the department. But I thought the exercise was meant to assist us to flag down some of the issues that are important, and the document has done that. But I thought that we could also say, in terms of what they have given here us, what are the other gaps that we think that other things that we think that we need to take into account to enrich their document, and so maybe tomorrow they can come with an updated, what to call a document, because we have enriched this document for our own, what to call oversight exercise as a tool tomorrow. For instance, the issues that I'm picking up, you know, is that I don't know, you know, last year, or maybe this year, with this APT, there's a lot of things that they would want to do. Whether it's going to be possible to achieve them is another thing. I think we all have now the report. Maybe you could assist me and the other people. You know, on program two, on program two, on page 32. How is the weather, honorable?
It's
fine. Yeah. On program two, you know, there's a lot of...
Okay. There's three letters...
We're prepared, then we say there's 22 letters written for outcome coordinating department and key participation in department on alignment of APTs with delivery agreement. Well, I don't know if maybe this work they want to undertake, but I remember that to us, the first, what to call it, what brought our attention to this work was the report that we got from the Public Service Commission. I remember the report that said, look, this department, they spend the budget up. But what they have spent on is not in line with what they had with the outcome, you know. Now, maybe here, and that work, I don't know whether it is the work of the department or the work of the Public Service Commission, or it was just a once-off survey for the Public Service Commission. To say these letters I don't know if they are going to do this work. I'm saying this also, Pelelani, taking into account what you have said about the staffing of the water course of the department in many particular areas. This is one area that I'm flagging to say, who's going to be doing this work? Is it them? Is it the consultants that are going to be doing this work, for example, of evaluating clearly? So, This is it's one thing, you know, that okay. So I think that then we should radically accept that the on this presentation maybe what you could do is to go and read more about this, then it will assist us then on the day of the on the day of the presentation. But thank you very much. As the honorable members were saying, but I don't know if Tenelan or anybody would want to comment on that, or we go to the next one.
Just two issues, sir, that are raised. Just to respond on them. But I suspect that the rest of the issues were just comments. But one issue that was raised by Honorable Mashiko, employing permanent staff versus consultant, which becomes more expensive than the consultant and stuff like that. Honorable Mashiko, it's really a question of the department conducting cost-benefit analysis in some of these decisions to check how much are they going to spend if they were to employ permanent staff on this position versus the consultant. No. I'm just talking generally. I'm still counting on that one. I'm just talking general, it's a matter of cost-benefit analysis. It's the cost-benefit analysis that guides the department or to take a cost-effective decision, because it must be cost-effective, it must be efficient and economical. Now, with regards to internal audit, that one, we have no question about it. You have to employ people. There is a tendency on departments where they appoint consultants to perform their core mandate. And once you start to appoint consultant to perform your core mandate, you are losing institutional memory. Yes. So for internal audit, like things like internal audit, you need people definitely to be appointed. You don't need consultants on that one. You may have some work being done by consultant, but not that the rest of the function should lie with consultant. It's too dangerous. But also on the issue that you are raising, Mr. Chairman, of the letters. I my understanding is that the letters that are spoken about here are for the department to really align their APPs with the delivery agreements. You see, the issue that we are raising, that was raised by the PSC, was merely on output vis-a-vis the allocations or the budget. That annually people tend to report that they've spent more budget, but they have not achieved their targets. That's a different case scenario. Now, this one, the department is responsible for monitoring the delivery and performance agreement, and therefore, the departments should make sure that they align their planning to that agreement, to that delivery agreement and performance agreement.
No, I just wanted to quickly agree with the research team. I believe that the committee should have as a number one priority, at least for those departments for which we have oversight. There should be non-negotiables, especially when it comes to governance and administration. At least each reporting time, just a proposal, we should have ordered, an audit plan. It should form part of when they are reporting first quarter expenditure, third quarter expenditure, and so on. There should also be, I hope, in future, an HR plan, so that the issue of vacancies being filled and how far are you worth filling them. It's not something we come back to every now and again. It should be standard reporting when they come and report to the committee. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
The last comment, Mr. Fiona, about the risk visits to, I
and these oversight visits that they make. Are they called oversight? Side visits.
But I think if you have to see it outside, Manumbon. If you have to see it, my father would go to Tosta. Manumbon, if you could. Now, the issue that I'm saying, I'm trying to when I was commenting about sometimes, I'm not saying that always when they do this oversight visit, they should invite us. But I think that it would be useful if ourselves, we can have an experience of that. Or maybe ourselves, we can... I think it would be useful to go with the department and to sometimes do it. We can do it ourselves one day, one morning, we, as part of our oversight. Maybe, Honorable Snare, we can draw that today we want to visit whether it's Home Affairs, whether whoever that we really want to. Visit, but maybe it will be useful in those areas where there are reports, so that we can really look at the improvement, you know, that has been done between the time that there was a visit and our own time. Just to look at what is being done.
Yes, you know, I agree with you on that, but I think next week. We are in Shida program. But I think we discuss it and next week we will be in Gerber camp. So why can we not do this oversight while we are there? When we are on the program. I'm not certain, but I think we discussed that.
Okay.
Okay,
so there's a principal agreement. That's the timing of it. Okay. Okay. Now we'll plan that. Move on, boss. Can I ring the TV, tell the papa? Zali, open up. Okay. Well, if we agree, then let's proceed to the NYDA.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Mr.
Chairperson, before I start this presentation, I need to point out that it is needless to say why it is important to assess the stock plan of the NYDA, because as we all know, the future belongs to the young. So it is important to know what are the plans for the youth. In that way, we know what are the plans for the future. Before again I begin, I must point out that this presentation is a continuation of what the committee has been doing throughout the past financial years in respect of the NYDA. For instance, we had site visits where we identified issues as the committee. So this is just a continuation of all those issues. And also we had the Auditor General coming and briefing the committee about the importance and the rationale of assessing stress plans. So everything that I'll say, I'll be saying against that backdrop. Well, we all know the strategic performance outcomes of the NYDA chairperson. They are all there, four of them. First one, improve the sustainable livelihood opportunities for young people. Enhanced enabling environment that promotes youth development. Enhance sustainable social capital for young people. Maintain accountability, prudent, efficient center for youth development. It is important, chairperson, to know that this is the departure of the strategic plan, because the strategic plan seeks to fulfill all these strategic outcomes of the NYDA. So if when we assess the strategic plan, we must assess it asking the question, does these strategic performance outcomes, performance targets and indicators respond to these strategic performance outcomes? And then the programs of the NYDA, we have economic participation, education and skills development, policy research, partnership and stakeholder management, communication and advisory services, National Youth Service, National Youth Fund. National Youth Fund, we know, is the vehicle through which the NYDA mobilizes funds, except for the funds that they receive from the president, which is a transfer. And then we have sports, recreation, and arts, as well as health and well-being. To begin with the budget, because the budget is the point of departure, is the genesis for everything, we can see in that line graph, chairperson, there is a hockey stick approach in the budget of the NYDA. If you go back from 2011-2012 financial year, at first, the budget of the NYDA declined from 385.9 million to 376 million. However, what we note nowadays, there are marginal increases in the budget of the NYDA, but I need to point out the increases are marginal, they are not substantial. So when we engage with the NYDA, as we'll see later, the first question is, do they feel that this budget is sufficient to really underpin all the strategic performance outcomes going forward? I think the answer there, chairperson, is predictable. Then, except for the transfer that they receive from the presidency, the NYDA, as I indicated earlier, they have got other revenue sources. So when we combine the budget that they receive from the presidency with the other budget from other extra revenue sources, we then come up with a consolidated budget. And I think in our last engagement on the strike plan of the NYDA, there were questions asked by the chairperson as to these other extra sources of income, are they certain, or they are just mere projections? And then if they are projections, we are not saying there's nothing wrong with that, but since the strike plan is premised on this budget, which includes projected budget, what if that budget does not materialize? What happens to the activities that are planned by the NYDA? I think maybe that's a question that they are also grappling with. But then we see in this slide, the consolidated budget for this financial year we are really dealing with is 432.4 million. That is adding to that 392.7 million. So it goes on and on, it increases to 453.6 million, 474.5 million, 498.3 million, 2016-17. And then now, the consolidated budget, now where does it go in terms of the activities of the NYDA? We see that 52.6% goes to project disbursements. And then that is followed by 19.1% that goes to employee costs. Those are salaries and other compensation for employees items. And then the least area is travel and entertainment, seminars and training. In my view, I think this is good that a significant chunk of the budget goes to the projects that have a direct impact on the youth. And then other issues which have to do with the operational or the running of the institution, they do not dominate the budget. Obviously, employees must get their salaries because they've got their board. So in my view, I did not see a problem with this kind of budget allocation. And then overall, because the point of departure when you assess the strike plan, there is a document published by the National Treasury together with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation that provides the framework for assessing strategic plans and annual performance plans. So it has got those key tenets. So if you are assessing a document, you must tick the box. Does the strike plan of the organization link with the priorities of government? The strategic performance outcomes, are they linked to the strategic performance objectives, to the performance targets and the indicators and so on and so forth? Is there logic? You know, is there a breakdown of the budget in terms of quotas, that is, in terms of the APP? So in my view, I think the formulation and presentation of the strike plan and annual performance plan of the NYDA really conforms to those guidelines as established or published by the National Treasury in terms of Chapter 5 and 30 of the Treasury regulations. So that's where I begin. It's against that backdrop. In terms of formulation of the strike plan, the basic feature of the strike plan, it meets all those requirements. That is the assessment that I do. So any other issues that will emerge are against that backdrop. So in a way, I'm saying, in my considered view and humble view, passing the strike plan as is in terms of that framework will not be a problem. But then we'll have to go and then pose questions now on other issues such as the budget. I'll start with the budget. I think I've already touched on this one, the sufficiency of the budget. Is it sufficient? I think I've alluded to those questions earlier, but I think those are the first questions that the members need to ask when they deal with the NYDA. Because sometime in the next 2-3 or so financial years, the NYDA will say, the reason why we could not achieve 1-3 is because the budget that was provided for was never enough. So we must begin from there. If they say it's not enough, which areas are not enough and why, and what can be done, also knowing that they have got their own extra sources of income, how can they mitigate that, and so on and so forth. And then another theme that I touched on is issues relating to the alignment between the strike plan and the 2011 census data. Because we know, Chairperson, all plans that are done by departments now, there must be a linkage between the plans and the data that is out. Because you cannot pretend as if things are still the same. The population has increased. Some provinces have more backlog in certain areas. Maybe we've got more youth in Gauteng, maybe in Eastern Cape. So do the plans of the NYDA respond to the new statistics that came out? When you look at the strike plan, they clearly provide the situational analysis where they speak about the 2013 census has come up with these statistics. But what we know, we want to know, the plans, the performance targets and strategic objectives, are they tied? Are they responding to those statistics? If that is not the case, are they planning to revise their strategic plan sometime in the MTEF or so? If they are linked, how are they linked? So they must explain that to the committee. And then the other issue is inconsistencies in the presentation of information. What I noted when I doing the analysis is that the 2012-13 APP had 6 programs, starting with administration. However, when I look at the 2013-14 APP, it excludes administration, and it starts to include directorate, but I will give an illustration. Here it is, Chairperson and Honorable Members. 2012-13 APP, we had administration, economic development, national youth service and social cohesion, national youth advisory information services, policy research and development, education and skills. Those are the programs of the NYDA, as we know. But obviously they have increased because we've got health and well-being, sports and cult and so on and so forth. But now when we look at the current one, the 2013-14, now we start to have executive directors' offices, chief operating offices, service delivery channels. So now there is no alignment. Now I don't know how to start compare and contrast, because it's kind of now the goalposts have shifted. But we are not implying that there is something, you know, very wrong about it. The question is, what triggered this kind of change? And when we do the analysis, when we hold them accountable, how do we go about if these things keep on changing? You know, because we need uniformity, we need consistency, we need standardization or in the presentation of information. And then also there is inconsistency in the presentation of information. For instance, in the 2013-14, in the 2013-14 APP, administration is listed under summary of expenses, whereas in the previous one, it was under programs. The same thing that I alluded to earlier. 2012-13, we've got programs clearly starting with administration. As we know, administration is the first program of each and every department. But in the current one, under programs, they start with economic development. Administration now is under summary of expenses. So it makes it difficult to really go on with your analysis and evaluation or assessment of the APP. And then there is a misalignment of figures in Table 2, summary of expenses as presented in the strat plans and the annual performance plan. And in my view, this seems to be an oversight mistake. I guess that is, this is where we need to go straight to the documents. Those are 2013-14 documents. The APP and the strat plan, there is Table 2 on the APP, no, the strat plan, that is page 13, summary of expenses. And that table must match or must be the same with that on the APP, which is on page 17, summary of expenses, page 2. When we look there, the total budget listed under for in the column for 2013-14 in the strike plan, we've got 413.3 million. But when you look in the annual performance plan, now you have 432.4 million. I think I will give members the opportunity to really look. Is Table 2, summary of expenses, page 13 in the strategic planning document. And then the very same table, which is on page 17 of the annual performance plan. The figures are supposed to correspond there, but there is an honest mistake in my view, an oversight mistake when they were doing when they were compiling the document. Because what I take is that 432.4 million, that is the total budget for 2013-14. But for some reason, they did that very well in the annual performance plan. But in the strategic plan, they took that and put it in the column for 2014-15. Then everything else just collapsed afterwards. So this is just an oversight mistake on their part, and then they need to just correct that. Because some people may take it serious, you know, it could mislead and so on and so forth, because it kills the credibility of the document. Thanks, Chair.
We know that this year
okay, as I am proceeding with the presentation, I go on to say that whilst it was easy to see allocation for each program in 2012-13 strategic plan and APP, however, in the current planning document for the APP and the strat plan, it is difficult to to see how much each program gets in terms of the allocation because of that mismatch that I alluded to earlier in terms of the presentation of information. Because here now we've got offices, chief operating offices, but in terms of the non-programs of the NYDA, you can't really tell how much goes to administration, how much goes to economic development, how much goes to national youth services and cohesion and so on and so forth. And then, now I'm done with issue of inconsistencies. Now I'm getting to the nitty-gritties of the of the performance targets of the NYDA. I start chairperson by focusing on the very important theme or performance targets of the NYDA, which is job creation. Which is job creation. Because my view, members, is that job creation is a key mandate of the NYDA, especially given the situation facing the youth. Fortunately, not just fortunately, but it is good that job creation is prominent, is a prominent feature of the NYDA strategic plan, especially in Program 6. So there I'm just giving credit where it is due. Job creation features very well in the planning documents of the NYDA as such, because this is the first priority of government. However, now I have questions also under that.
Another person like that. What I'm saying is that the question is going to, now going to ask you, I believe it, and that
there is a question. Yes. Yes, in terms of the question against that backdrop, the first one is, I'm taking 2013-14 financial year as an example, but the allocations, they are targeted for the other financial years, MCS and so on. But in terms of 2013-14, they say they will have 1,200 jobs facilitated through the job placement project. So the question here is, has the NYDA secured agreement with stakeholders? And who are these stakeholders in terms of how many in this total number of 1,200 jobs, how many will be created or facilitated in KZN, how many in Eastern Cape, how many in Gauteng, and so on and so forth. So the members will want to know the provincial spread, because as for now, we just get that there will be 1,200 jobs, but where will those jobs be created or facilitated? And then who are the stakeholders? Because we know the job of the NYDA is to enter into agreement with stakeholders. And then who are those stakeholders in terms of practicalities now? And are the agreements already in place, or are these just projections that all along the way we'll try and have some agreements with stakeholders? If there are agreements, what sort of agreements? In terms of in which provinces are these placements taking place, how many are benefiting rural communities? The issue of rural communities, that for me is a critical one, because they must give us a breakdown. If you say you're going to have 1,200 jobs, I feel that you must say at least this so and so number will go to rural areas and give us a picture which rural areas will benefit from that. The same with the 2,930 jobs sustained through economic development program. Who are the stakeholders? Are the guarantees in place? What is the stake for the rural youth? Those are just cross-cutting issues that I'm asking on the job performance target. And then they had a performance target also under jobs. They say, in one point they say, will facilitate so and so number of jobs. On the other one they say, we will create. So I think it's very important for the community to know the difference. What is the difference between creating and facilitating a job? So they must come out very, very clear on that one. And then another question, I think it was alluded to by the AG, when they say we'll create so and so number of jobs, what is regarded as a job created in terms of remuneration and period? Is it a day-long job? week long, a month long, something that pays 1,000 or 500 and so on and so forth. And then benchmarking from past experience, what is the sustainability of these jobs that are created? Because I think the key issue is creating sustainable jobs. So in their experience, maybe we may ask, what is the level of sustainability on average when they look back in retrospect? How sustainable are these jobs? And the one that they plan to achieve, how many of them are likely to be sustainable and how many are likely to be piecemeal jobs, as someone may put it? And then another performance target is the entrepreneurship-related support program. That is in page 19 to 20 of the APP. And I think this is a very pertinent performance target because we know in the country we are lacking in terms of entrepreneurship. So, and that is key to job creation as well. So it is featured in the strike plan, and it is good. And the questions now are, of the 40,000 youth supported through non-financial entrepreneurial support, what is the provincial spread? And how many are benefiting rural communities? So those are just key questions. And then on the 2,500 business vouchers to be provided, we know it's vouchers, but what we want to know, what do these vouchers entail in terms of business support? Is it mentorship? Is it giving you starting capital? What is the content of these vouchers in terms of practicalities now? And then who are the stakeholders? What is the contribution of each stakeholder? What is the contribution of the NYDA? And then on the 1,000 youth supported through green economy, where are these projects located? If the committee want to go there and see this green economy project, where are they? Are they in the Eastern Cape? How many? And what is the size of these programs? Just the practicalities. And then the technical training related performance targets, page 26 of the APP. And I say technical training is supposed to be the key mandate and feature of the NYDA performance. Why do I say this? It's because we know, as far as we know that we are lacking in terms of jobs in the country, and we know the ingredients, but we know the reason why we lack on the technical aspect of things, the lack of artisans, the lack of engineers, and so on and so forth. So the NYDA is the vehicle of government to really train the youth so as to sustain jobs and fill in these gaps that are lacking. It is to be expected that this kind of performance target becomes a key feature and takes a significant chunk of the budget. Their effort will go in this one. But in my view, it does not feature in the plans as prominent as it should be. For instance, they have one performance target where they plan in 2013-14 alone to train 2,000 young people through this technical program. And then over the MTF altogether is 6,620 young people that are said to benefit. And in my view, I think that is not enough. I think this is the area where we really need. You can teach people how to do CVs, how to do presentations, but the technical aspect, the technical skill is the most important performance target in my view. And then what I noted when I looked in the APP is that in 2013-14 alone, providing technical skill for the 2,000 young people, it will cost 7.5 million. And to me, it seems a sizable chunk of the budget. And the question would be, what is really involved in training the youth in terms of technical skills? Why does it cost so much? How much do external stakeholders bring on board versus what the NYDA brings? Because maybe the issue of the budget could be the reason why they only train 2,000 young people in 2013-14 alone. It could be the issue of the budget. So why does it cost so much, you know, so that the committee will understand? And then how can you make sure that this performance target gets a sizable budget as opposed to others? And then the metric rewrite program. Again, this is a very pertinent program. We know the issue of education. So giving young people a second chance is a good thing, you know. But in my mind, when I was doing this, I grappled with the question, how does the youth access these opportunities, like this metric, right? Because in my mind, you know, as much as the NYDA requires a budget, but I do feel that NYDA must be out there. It must be on your face as a young people. When you wake up, you must be awakened by an advert telling you about these opportunities provided by the NYDA. There must be, for instance, when you go to a particular school, saying, oh, this is Chief Lutai School, maybe in collaboration with the NYDA. The NYDA must be there and tell you about all these opportunities. Because it's well and good to have opportunities, but if they are not well known by the supposed beneficiaries, it might not really help as much. And also, is there an advert, like on TV, that seeks to make this program, Matric Right, known to young people? Because as far as I know, there is no program that advertises this one. So you may end up having a situation where young people who benefit from this program are those who have got access to internet or who are closer to towns and to offices of the NYDA. But those who need this program more in rural communities, they don't know anything about it. So those are the issues, those are the areas that I think the NYDA can improve. And then, yes, chapter 7. Yes. And then, I think the issue of rural beneficiation, I alluded to clearly earlier that, you know, if it were to be for me, I would say the strike plan of the NYDA in each and every performance target, it must be broken down into two categories. When you say 1,000 young people to be supported through 1, 2, 3, and say of that 1,600 will go to young people, and then the committee will have to be able to, when it's doing its oversight, to see whether the NYDA is fulfilling that. Because we would like to track how is the NYDA contributing to the youth in rural areas where the need is very much prominent. So that is just that, and I think, yeah, that's it for me, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chairperson, now if I come back to the budget, it's on page 5. My view is that I think they must, and then also you must credit with that entrepreneurial thing on page 14, I think, 13, 12. I think there must be a shift between, because they are going for the hour to create jobs, but you cannot create jobs if there is no entrepreneurs. And that is the biggest problem that the world economy experiences at this stage. Not only in South Africa, but now they have only 2%, I think, of their budget goes into seminars and training. And I had the opportunity, last Monday, I had a workshop of the NYDA in Marshall Bay. And that was a very successful workshop with 60 young guys, young people, you know, entrepreneurs. And my view is that, and that comes to the question that also Mr. Swart, Honorable Swart, and I think that some of you people also raised, is about the sustainability of the world. And they were brilliant ideas. And they are going to assist on a small scale now, some of the people. I think it's 60 people, and if you can have sustainable, say, 10 people, 5 or 10, they will also create new jobs. But I think, personally, they must focus more on this. That's my personal opinion on that, because I had experience now with them. And these people who present the course was very good. But, and there was unanimous feeling under the youth of that 60 people, is that they cannot go out anymore. There's no jobs around in the rural areas. And they by themselves realize that the only way they can solve this issue is to start their own business. And they were brilliant ideas. I was surprised with the ideas of our young people. But I think in this regard, I think my view is that they must more focus on training entrepreneurs. And I think that is, we must, I mentioned that in East London. And I've also discussed with some of people of the realtors and the summer over this weekend. And they agree very positive on this. So I'm not certain how we're going to address this. Perhaps they must discuss it with trade and what is the trade and industry or economic workshops, because there's also not a link. You know, we sit here in the Western Cape with a lot of problems, experience. Go down to Yassis River and look at all the places where the clothing industry closing. You know, when 5 years ago, you can go to a place here in Yassis River and Woodstock, and there were a lot of factories. And these people, they lost a lot of jobs. And they all tell you, they have the skills, but they just want this people who can take them, who can help them. But sorry to disturb you, Chair, yes.
I
just
can
see
you
also tired.
Chair, for me, I just want to know, I think that the NYDA, they don't have a clear, I don't know, the plan, how do they align themselves in different segments. Because when we talk about youth activities, we are not having certain activities like entrepreneurship. It cuts across. And when it cuts across, there's no clear alignment to say, this is a practical example that should be right. I would believe that they were supposed to be in every government department of education. So that if the department of if when the year finishes and so many people have failed, they are the first one to get that information to say, in this province, so many people failed to trick. And those are the people that we are going to approach. Because the Department of Education has got everyone, including rural areas, they've got that data in their hands. And it is not clear how do they align themselves with all this. When it comes to an example of Technica, also there's no alignment with higher education. Because if there was alignment, they will be able to reach people in rural areas. Because the higher education has got satellite offices where they deal with technical issues, technical students who may not be able to go to town, but on the side there's an office there, you know. So if they can align themselves with those things, they'll be able to reach where they want to do. But when I look at this, there's no alignment at all with themselves. In terms of job creation, how do they create jobs? It's not their role. For me, it's not their role. Their role is to facilitate and coordinate. So they cannot have a word that says job creation. It must be out of their language or whatever, out of their text. It must just be facilitation, coordination, monitoring and evaluating to make sure that if they place a certain, they can monitor to say, Department of Trade and Industry, in your budget in National Empowerment Fund, how many youth have benefited out of that fund? There are different funds within economic cluster. How many youth are those have benefited of? That is monitoring. Then if there's a struggle where the department says we can't get youth, then it is their role to make sure that youth know. So once they can start to learn to align themselves, then they'll be able to move at this moment. I don't know what it is, it's a strategic thing, but it does not talk about anything. For me, it's English. You know, and in terms of rural, they also align themselves with rural development as much as they align them. So it simply means their progress should be in such a way that when they want something, they know where to get that information. Every moment, it is just haphazardly, it is just the budget, including the money that you were, you know, you were questioning, because now I was questioning myself. 7.5 million. What are they going to do with it? Involvement in facilitating. They don't even have to have that money. They just have to make sure that some of the things is happening. But at this moment, maybe they need to redo and make clear where do they go to. That is my own observation. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, just a question on page 4. Those figures for 14, 15, 16, and 17, does that include their own income as well? Because for this year, they included the budget, 34 million they're going to get from own income. They only achieved 16 million. So, you know, how accurate are these figures and where they're going to get the rest of the money from to do their job and to complete their budgets? And how is this going to be affected by the appointment of, and the salary bill, particularly by the appointment of the board members that has now been concluded?
I'll just say it to the current session. The man is running away.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, because the last time when they reported, there were provinces that were not functioning. Yeah? And there were provinces that did not have staff. Does this mean that they've included provinces, or is it just a national office that they are taking about? Because it's not clear to say. For me, I was thinking that in the same thing, they'll be telling us that in terms of provinces, how are they going to be allocated? We even gave them a challenge to say in provinces, they can only be based in towns. They must try to spread themselves in provinces to rural areas. How, where is that? Where does it catch in?
Yeah, that's
I do think that, honorable members, the guideline is what honorable Snell said earlier. We agreed with the performance monitoring and evaluation, and that the real, what you call it, discussion, engagement, will be with the, what you call it, the entities themselves, at NYTA, but for now, I think maybe it's not a comment that we are making things that we plan to do. And that's also for me, Mr. Samosa, this program, where is this program that you showed us on page 8, no? This is what is there for 2012, the one that you wanted to make a triple P in 2012, 2013. And for 2013, 2014. Where is this? Because in the APP, it looks like they are back in their old, what you call the ways, you know.
That's what to me.
Yeah. Hmm. So.
Okay. Thanks, Chaperson, and thanks, members, for the questions. Maybe.
I'm sorry, that's there.
On the lighter side, the webpage of the APP, I see that the minister signed 2012 for the exhibit.
That repeat.
Yeah, signing off. Okay.
All right, Chairperson, thanks so much. Maybe to begin with the question, the first question that was asked by Honorable Swart about the budget of the NYDA in terms of page 4. Yes, it's true, that budget includes the transfer that they will receive from the presidency. And then the remainder is the extra sources of income that they are projecting to get. But those are just projections, because those extra sources of income, they include interest on the loans that they provided to the youth, and then repayment of the actual loans, and then the other funding that they get through the National Youth Fund program. So those are just projections. But as to whether they will get that kind of amount or not, well, I think they will explain when they come. But that's the other question that I had in mind also when I was dealing with this. What will happen if they do not get that kind of... Yes. Okay, thanks. And then on the issue, I couldn't agree more with Honorable Mfulo on the issues of the functionality of provincial offices. Hence I say when I began that this assessment is against the backdrop of what the committee has been doing with the NYDA, including those site visits, because we realize that their branch offices, their provincial offices, they are lacking in terms of personnel. They are also just lacking because they also said they have got problems in having offices in remote rural areas. So I think those are some of the questions that will be asked as to how are you improving in that front, because all this that is included in the strike plan assumes that they've got structures in place. Yes, because the budget comes from the national, but then implementation is at a provincial and at a branch level. And if the offices are not functioning as effective, are not capacitated, obviously that will pose problems. So that will be part of the discussions. And then the other point raised by Honorable Mfulo, the linkages with other departments. Because the act of the NYDA, I think the problem of whether the task or the role of the NYDA is to facilitate or to implement or to create job opportunities. One may say it stems from their act, which is under amendment, which they are amending right now, because the act says their role is to facilitate, coordinate, and implement. So the question that we had as researchers at some point was, isn't it that maybe the role of the NYDA is only to coordinate and facilitate, but not really to implement? It's the other stakeholders. So what they do, they just provide the environment and take all these stakeholders that are responsible or are relevant for that particular performance target and say, okay, this is how we think we may contribute to the NYDA, but not actually to implement. But I think they'll be here to also provide a detailed explanation on that one. And then the question raised by the chairperson, the programs that I alluded to. Where are these programs? Is the programs, chairperson, in terms of 2013-14, you see them in page 17 of the APP. The one that I say they are now different from what they have included in their previous APP. So that slide gives you a clear picture of what they had in terms of programs in 2012-13 and the budget tied with those programs. Now they've got the Economic Development, Executive Director's Office, and so on and so forth. You'll find that in page 17 of this APP. But when you look at the APP of 2012-13, you will see only those programs. So there's this disjuncture of which I can't really put my finger on it and say this is the reason why they did that, but it causes some confusion when you're doing the analysis and when you're saying, okay, this program is a priority, this one is not, and so on and so forth. So I think, again, that's a question that needs to be posed to the NYDA when they come and present. I think, yeah, that will be all.
When you go through that strategic plan and you look at all those things, they have what they call strategic outcome goals. And some of them are clustered under those like economic development, and another one, and peace development are under strategic objective number one, and the others under number two, and they end up in four. Except the administration. It comes to what you're saying, they don't have a separate issue of administration. But under what they call this strategic outcome areas, 1, 2, 3, 4, where with one of them they made a mistake and wrote strategic goal number 4 twice, but it's actually one. They have 4 strategic goals and left administration. I'm sure they come up to 5 if they have administration. They concept. It's just that I don't know what their intention was in changing everything here. Because they outlined it in a very academic way, but when it comes to practicality, it just went off as you mentioned.
I think that one is a bit confusing, you know, because if you look at it, number two, executive director's office, would you say he's that it's a program? There's another one, chief executive office. The last one is the chief operating office. If you go through their program, they are actually, the programs are in line with the old ones. If you go through, if you look at the program. But I heard at the beginning you spoke about some honest mistakes. Maybe we can include this one under that category. Now, all members, I don't know if there are any comments that you would like to make, is this the present or what?
Oh, no, it has to, even what Honorable Gomez said last month, I thought of something.
Okay.
Earlier, Honourable Member Khelebo mentioned that there is no alignment between the work of the NYQA and the DTI, and also there isn't an explicit focus on rural youth and rural areas. So I just picked up this from their annual report, where it shows below is a schedule of advances made to small, medium, and micro enterprises in different sectors. What you would observe there for 2012, for example, the loans that have been given out to SMEs have a focus on services, but there isn't anything for agriculture. There is much, less emphasis on manufacturing. Now the concern would be, is this the right strategy for the NYTDA? Because I don't believe it's possible that you have young people in rural areas who are not interested in farming at all, such that you cannot even fund one SMME basin, which is almost 60% in the rural areas of the population base there. So it's just something that I wanted the committee to be. Yes.
because this will be our way of saying things.
Very the young people, there was one who was interested in 2011. That person got frustrated in 2012, couldn't continue.
The
annual report.
It's the annual report. But that is actually. Yeah.
Well, another members, I think we can take a break now. Others can go to the doctor. Those who are not well. And those who are well would have lunch. And in the afternoon we'll come with the details for the third quarter report.
Jay, can we, we've got no meeting tomorrow. Why don't we do the third quarter report tomorrow morning as well as the budget office appointment and get that done with?
Sorry? What is the feeling?
Yes.
So we break now.
We come tomorrow 9:30.
Is that in order, honourable member?
This is an agenda. Or what's this after the agenda? Why don't we finish today the stuff, then tomorrow we can do other work? Not constituency work, or committee work, but other work.
What?
I want to go to.
We're
inviting honourable Matagane, the captain of the.
Of the parliamentary golf club.
So I want to invite him this afternoon. But on a serious note, honourable members, that the proposal, honourable Dr. Van Dijk is not happy with the proposal. But what are the other comments? Sorry, Mamsa.
Chair, I think on the roof on date wasn't here when we said, you know, that we can try and move the meeting forward on national development, which is not possible. So we're going to have nothing to do tomorrow. So let's do it, let's do this tomorrow morning and give it the attention to it. It's an important report. And it's through the budget point, the budget office point.
Well, proposal, what did they say?
Unanimous.
Adopted, no, the part of the word I wanted to call it. No, it's fine. Let's then meet tomorrow, what time?
9:30,
10. I don't meet at 10.
10.
Yeah. So then I hope that you haven't cancelled the other small meeting, the program for the
budget office.
Excuse me.
Director.
That's right. Yeah.
It will still be on the agenda for tomorrow, too.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Then, honourable members, I think that then the meeting stands adjourned until tomorrow at 10.